Once upon a time, in a land so fair, a man named Conor O'Brien was there. And every time he sang, the people's hearts were filled. It's a great big tower of love he did build with his voice. Ah, but what if I told you that time was now? And Conor O'Brien came to Galway. Oh, wow! Yes, he graced us with an evening ode to a song that he wrote. And 'twas all captured for your pleasure, word for word, and note for note. You don't. Let's jump right in.
What is a song?
Where do songs come from? What is the life of a song?
How much can a song morph and change before it becomes something else entirely?
This is one song.
Ladies and gentlemen and beyond, please welcome Mr. Conor O'Brien.
Hi.
Cheers, Conor.
Hey, Peter. Cheers.
It's an honor to have you here.
Yeah. Cheers, everybody. Good to be here. Nice one.
Conor O'Brien, for those of you who might not know, probably most of you do know, has a project for 10 or so years now, 10, 12 years,
yeah,
called
more.
Villagers. And we're here to talk about a song, a Villagers song called Nothing Arrived. But what I like to do, Conor, is first give people a bit of context as to how we know each other and how we met and stuff.
Yeah.
You remember obviously when we met, it was not that long ago.
Yeah, was that this? It was this year.
This year.
Yeah, in Ballymaloe, another love story festival, Ballymaloe, and it was, you were playing right before, I think, and then afterwards we spent, I think we were up until about 6 a.m. talking about life and death and
yes,
everything in between.
Yeah, so that was, I think it was March of this year. And it's easy to forget now, I was saying this earlier, that it's easy to forget now that this year started still in like lockdown, you know, it kind of feels like we're out of that now, cross the fingers. But that time in March, that was one of the first gigs back for most of us. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people coming, it was like a little mini festival and I was playing and you were playing I feel ignorant to say this now, but I had heard the name Villagers many times, having, you know, lived in Ireland for 5-6 years, but I still hadn't acquainted myself with the music. And so that night I did a performance, and then I went off stage and I met you, and I felt from the beginning that this guy's a nice guy. But then, so after I played, you went on stage, and I was sort of standing at the side of the room, sort of just relaxing from, you know, winding down from having done a thing myself, but watching you guys. And I don't know if you remember, but it was kind of, the energy in the room that night was pretty scattered, at least for most of the day. The artists that went on before me had a lot of issues, like trying to hear themselves play because people were there to have the crack and to drink beers. For people who are listening at home, not in Ireland, because this is a podcast, people from not in Ireland will be listening to this. When I say have the crack, I'm not talking about the drug crack. I'm saying go look it up. It's an Irish expression, have the crack. But that people were there kind of to have the crack and possibly to see you as well. So I had this feeling of like, oh my God, nobody cares about the music here. It was a bit of a struggle for a lot of the artists that day. So then you went on stage, and for the first time that night, the attention sort of started to drift towards the stage.
Mm.
So I'm watching this happen, seeing and hearing you for the first time.
The power of the narcissist. Yes.
Well, or the power of the music, or I could see that there was a reverence for the music that you've made and cultivated. There was a reverence there amongst the people. And I was witnessing that. And I had a very, I might have told you this before, but I had this really powerful moment. It was two or three songs in. You were kind of playing this song. And I know what song it is now, but at the time it was the first time I'd heard it. But you were going through the song and it was growing dynamically. And it sort of reached this peak and this chord. And you hit a high note with your voice. And everybody in the whole room turned their heads. And everybody went, yeah! Started clapping in the middle of the song. And I did too. It was one of these musical experiences that was so magnetic that I went from being sort of at the back, at the side of the room, I ran up to the front of the stage and I stayed there for the rest of the show. That's how much it drew me in. So yeah, and then we ended up, you know, chatting that evening and having a good time. And we've met a few times since so that's how we are here. You were very gracious to
accept this invitation. Or yesterday you took me foraging for the first time.
I did take you foraging,
which was fascinating. We found our food in the forest, which I've never done before.
Right.
Which is very exciting.
We didn't find as much as I had hoped to find.
It was enough, Peter.
We were foraging for mushrooms, and I was certain a couple spots would be plentiful, and they weren't as plentiful.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm glad you were glad to be out there regardless, because I was frantically thinking, oh my God, I told this guy we'd find some mushrooms and there's no mushrooms out here. But we did find a few. We made a nice mushroom risotto and
it was delightful.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, let's get to the song. I know that this song, so when I first invited Connor to do this, we didn't have a song in mind. So we sat down for lunch one day talking about what could be the song. And he wasn't sure what song to do. And I said, I asked you, is there any song of yours that like people have covered or, you know, that other people play? And immediately a song popped into your mind. Mm. And it was this one. So that was how we chose the song. So let's go back to the very beginning. That, as far as you can remember, and if you want to contextualize that with how the whole project started, whatever makes sense to you to like what led you to the point where this song came about.
Well, I guess it was the beginning of this tune was I was kind of in a manic state of work because I just finished touring for the first time ever, and I just traveled like all around everywhere in the world and stuff, and just got back and all I knew how to do was work. So I just went straight back into my home studio and just wrote and made crazy little experiments and tried to learn how to use synthesizers and things. And and I remember at that time I was living in a house which was kind of a commune-y kind of vibe to it, and there was lots of parties and things, and I just have this memory of that period of parties happening. And I was just like, I have planned to work tonight. And the door would be closed and someone would like spill into the room. And I'd be like, get out! So it wasn't much fun around that time. But I think you can hear that in the song, actually. It's not the funnest song in the world. And this song went through lots of different stages. It was like, it was a way of processing grief for me and a way of kind of figuring out like how to use it in a more transformative way, in a positive way. And I think that's what music is really good at anyway, you know? So I think this tune kind of encapsulated that for me, you know, personally.
Yeah. And so you say it went through many stages. What was the first sort of, because first of all, I know there's a version on your, is it your second album, the full band version of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a sort of acoustic version, just you and your guitar, that like if you go online and find your music on, a major streaming platform, which I'll not advertise for. But if you go on there, you'll find that's like the first song that pops up is this acoustic version of this song. So there's already two very different versions of the song. How did it start off? Do you know, were you writing on the guitar or?
Yeah, it started very differently. I'm not sure. I think it was probably on the guitar, but a lot of the time when you do these acoustic versions, a lot of people think that that's the original version of the song. But this was actually something I just got together for said streaming platform, which was very new at the time. And I was in London at the time, and I was told to go the next morning to go to do some session in an office somewhere for this new company. And I'd read a bit about it and I went and did it, but I actually was nearly gonna, I was gonna call in sick because I was really overworked and everything. And I was just like, oh, I just can't do this. I don't want to do it. And my manager like just kicked me up the ass and was like, go in and do it, record it. And it ended up just being the thing that everywhere I go when anyone's, you know, asking me about my music, they're like, I've listened to this song, nothing arrived.
So the manager was right in a way.
Well, it's just, I don't understand how all that works, but it's just funny. It's obviously changed the course of things for in terms of where I can play music, my music and stuff, you know, and it's kind of interesting. But but that version wasn't the version that, I did lots of strange ones. I remember sending one to Richie from Jape, and it was a really down version, which was really like trying to encapsulate the depths of a feeling of nothingness, you know. And he loved it so much, that Richie, and he was really like, dude, you've really captured something there. And then like 6 months later, I sent him the album, and there's this really chirpy piano-led version of it. And he was like, oh, you sold it.
What have you done?
You sold it. So it had a lot of phases, you know, but... You know, that's cool. It's fun. You know.
But that was one of the things you also said to me at the start when this, you know, when I asked you that first question that prompted the idea of maybe focusing on this song for the evening. And you were like, oh, yeah, I have this other version of the song, an earlier version of the song that I kind of forgot about. And you were gracious enough to send that over to me, which I've not heard yet. We've been saving it for this moment.
I hadn't heard it until you reminded me of it, and I found it on an old hard drive, and
that's amazing.
It's really weird and funny.
So should we start with that as far as listening to versions of this song? Because we're gonna listen to some versions of this song and ultimately play one at the end of the show. But is that a good place to start, do you think?
I mean, does everyone here know the song? You heard Nothing Arrived? Have you heard that song? Okay, that probably makes sense to start with the weird version of it.
Yeah? I mean... we could also we could pull up the acoustic version or the band version, but we could get there as well.
You tell me, Peter.
I think let's start with this odd version. Let's start with the version that nobody's heard. How
let's
many
do
people
it.
Do you
let's
think
do
have heard this?
I actually don't know if anyone has heard. Yeah, I don't think anyone would have heard this one. Maybe,
nobody.
Maybe two people or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
exclusive.
No. This, the file that you sent me is called Nothing Arrived, Second Demo.
Oh.
What's the first demo?
That was probably the one I sent to Richie, the first demo. And then it went all around and...
Okay. Is there anything you want to say about this
before
we play
it? Well, it sounds like I was listening to, like, Aphex Twin and Portishead and... trying to fit it into a folk song I'd just written.
okay.
Sort of unsuccessfully, basically. But yeah.
Let's see.
Thank you. the scatters, and the seabird sings. So why should we fear what travel brings? What were we hoping to get out of this? Some kind of momentary bliss, something bit the bullet.
Different lyrics.
But there was nothing harmed.
Very melodramatic, I think. It's a
yeah. Sleep. It's just a false alarm, 'cause nothing arrives. Nothing arrives. Nothing arrives. Nothing arrives. Nothing, 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 nothing. It's our dearest ally, closest friend. It's our darkest blackout. It's our final end. My dear sweet nothing, let's start anew. From here on in, it's just me and you.
So, like, I sent this to my manager and he was like, oh, please, please, no.
Really?
God, no. yeah, as you can imagine. It's like... But it gets kind of 90s house here, which is cool. I kind of dig it.
So I guess it's over. I guess it's begun.
Something. I don't know.
Yes. 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 Yeah. I just have to say, regardless of how you, whatever you feel about that, how cool is it that we get to hear something, you know, that would normally not be heard, you know, that sits on an artist's hard drive. You know, who knows? I don't know. Maybe at some point, like, in, I hope you have a long life. So let's say in like 70, 80 years after you've passed away, someone's going through your hard drives, you know, And they find that and they're putting it together on this bastardized sort of collections of the unheard material.
In their brain.
Maybe. Like, yeah. Yeah, in their microchipped brain.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, no worries.
I can hear the influences that you spoke about. I want to talk about this comment you made, though, about the manager. You sent it to the manager, and the manager was like...
I know, I probably did. I think I send him a lot of things. He always gets... My poor manager, he always gets, like, a version of a song that he loves, and then... Yeah. And then seven more versions after that, you know? And then he's like, "Please, right. Just go back to the first one." And inevitably, I usually do. So that's kind of the funny thing. But
yeah. I can't help but think when I hear that, like, because nowadays, with the way technology is, an artist can theoretically make a song and put it online themselves, right? Mm. Just without showing it to anybody first. Whereas it used to be. You know, in the old days of the music industry, you'd have all these record label executives, all these filters, managers, they would sort of police what makes it to the final line, you know. And of course, in one way, that can stifle creativity. But in another sense, it can be a useful filter sometimes to have someone from the outside being like, actually, you know what, maybe that other version you did was better or something like that. And I'm not even talking about this track, but like, I think I just wanted to say that sometimes, like managers and labels can be demonized as trying to control an artist's creative output. Whereas I don't often hear, them being thanked and praised for actually helping to filter an artist's output. Because I think that's, personally, I think that's useful.
Yeah, totally. But I think the process of, there's always going to be friction there because when you do those other seven or eight versions of a song, you probably find like lots of little riffs and chords within those that you put away and then they spawn another three or four songs differently. So, you know what I mean? Like that probably happens for you where you search for something and you miss it and then you put away the thing that you did while missing it, and then eventually 2 years later that's a new song or something. So
right,
so a lot of it's like, I think if you have someone else who's working with you, they'll be, you know, they might be able to see that you're that's the process you've been doing for years, but yes. You're so inside of it yourself you can't see it. So
yeah,
but if you're outside of it, you wouldn't be doing it. So it's such a subjective thing, you know. It's a funny
one, but and when you are a creative person who's prolific and just likes to make stuff, I don't know. And I think most creative people feel like, because when you're creating something, anybody can experience this. You might be drawing something, or if when you get that buzz of creating something new, it can feel so exciting. And you think, and you know, there are a lot of creative people. I feel this sometimes, like I'll be trying to create something and I get so excited about it that I, you know, my mind goes wild at the possibilities and how the impact this could have and just how I just get so in love with the idea. But I love all the ideas, you see. And if I were to share them all, it's like nobody would ever have time to ingest all that, you know, and if they did, they would go crazy.
Yeah, like your filter is wrong for a while.
Yeah, you can't filter yourself, really.
So you're like manically making
stuff. You need friends
stuff.
Or a manager or somebody to bounce ideas off of, maybe.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Other people is good.
Yeah, community. Yeah.
Going outside is good.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so that was the second demo of Nothing Arrived.
I actually didn't know that. Yeah,
probably. It says second demo. There was possibly a version that you sent to your friend Richie before. Then it turned into the version that made it on the album. Was there anything in between, perhaps? Or?
I don't know, but I remember I made the album was a Wayland, and I remember making a lot of the demos to a very high standard before going into the studio with all the guys.
Like at home, doing it yourself. Yeah.
And I remember at one stage just thinking that song, this song we're talking about, Nothing Arrived, needed to have a bit more of a kind of a just a, I mean, to be bigger, because the rest of the record was becoming like really big and propulsive and really rhythm based and stuff. So I remember just fitting the arrangement of the record of this song into what I thought, see. Where I thought the album was going, kind of thing.
So the context of the album shaped the sort of timbre
that
of the
and
song.
Also we've been touring for that was the first time in my life I'd ever done like lots of festivals, and you know, as a sort of an introverted person, it's weird when you're suddenly just on all these big stages everywhere playing lots of festivals. So I was writing music which I knew was going to have to be in festivals again. So I was putting big beats to it.
Oh,
and stuff.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, this has got to be big so that everyone's going to dance and boogie and stuff. And, which sometimes is really cool. I think that works quite a lot for musicians quite often. But other times it can really dilute what you're doing, because what you're doing is maybe much more interesting than that, and maybe much more long-term than that, you know.
Huh.
So I learned a lot. Yeah, I learned a lot doing it. But that's what's cool about having different versions of songs, because it can live.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of what I aim to explore with this thing, is what is the song actually? Because we have this idea of songs where they come out on an album, and we sort of think of that as the definitive version of the song.
Yes.
Whereas actually a song is much more fluid and alive than that. Like, that's just a version of the song. And this was another version of the song, and it's very different.
Mm.
And so where... I guess what I aim to explore is, what is the song? What's the substance of the song, you know? Mm. And so that's a very different musically, but, and even lyrically, there's some different lines in there, but there's still something in of what you spoke before of transforming that grief into something
like,
positive. That's the core of the song.
Like for when I sing it live, that lyric, my dear sweet nothing, let's start anew from here on in, it's just me and you. And that's the lyric that I always get into it psychologically when I'm singing.
Okay.
It brings me into it because it's such a clear line for me, because it's just about like allowing the catastrophe of life to kind of fully show itself to you, and then letting that kind of cleanse you, and sort of letting that, be sort of a revelatory thing or something that allows you to see life in a lens which you didn't have before or something, rather than letting it bring you down, you know.
Yeah,
that's kind of what the song's about. It's kind of a cleansing thing, you know. It's like from a darkness, I suppose. Yeah
there's a lot of lyrics in the song that sort of, there's a lot of lines that sort of, for me personally, would have stuck out. And I, you know, that first time I was describing seeing you play back in March this year, and I'm seeing a full show for the first time of songs I don't know. And this song actually had a couple lines that really stuck out to me. Just the main line, I waited for something and something died. So I waited for nothing and nothing arrived. That line is very powerful, I think. So, okay. We need to hear more of the song. I want to get to the full band version, but I'd like to do a little detour if you don't mind, because as you said, the acoustic version that you recorded when you were not feeling well and ushered into the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually, like the version I saw you play back in March is that version more or less. You had a pianist playing with you then.
Yeah.
Shout out to Kevin. It is a very effective moving version of the song. Like you answered the question I asked you, is there a song of yours that a lot of people have played? This is the one. So I then went home after that conversation and I looked up on YouTube, Villagers, Nothing Arrived cover. And what did I find? I found countless versions of people playing this song. And I started to listen to some of them. And I just got this idea to put together a video that's a Frankenstein bastardized version of the song where each of these people gets one line.
Did you go through with that idea?
I followed through.
Oh, my God.
So I don't know if you've seen any or some or all of these.
That's the most you thing I've ever.
And now this is truly Frankenstein monster material, but it really does convey how many people this song has touched and moved. And so I'd love to share that with you.
Are they all in different keys as well?
So well, that's a very good question. I would say, I'm not going to answer that. I want to just play you the video.
Okay. I'm so excited.
You ready? Now, all of these clips were on YouTube under the title Nothing Arrived, Villagers Cover.
This is like meta postmodern.
Okay. Here we go.
Sing. So why should we fear what travel brings?
What were we hoping to get out of this?
Some kind of moment, terror.
Something died.
So I waited for nothing.
Nothing arrived.
It's a dearest ally. It's our closest friend.
It's your darkest blackout.
I waited for something,
and something died.
So I waited for nothing.
Nothing arrived.
Well, I guess it's over.
Yes, it's begun.
It's a loser's table, but we've already won. It's
a money battle, it's a constant game.
I guess I was busy. When nothing arrived,
I guess I was busy.
I had a little tear there. I was like, holy shit. Big up to Peter for compiling that video. That's right.
It just is amazing. I don't know. I just was blown away by sitting there watching all these people in their living rooms, in their van, playing this song. And you asked, are they all in the same key? 90% of them were in the same key, But then there were some, so all those quick ones at the end, that's just do dee do dee dee do dee do da, all different keys, all different, you know. Yeah.
Wow. That was unreal.
Yes. But most of those versions are based off of your acoustic version. Mm-hmm. A lot of the guitar parts are mimicking your guitar part exactly. A couple of them seem more based on the full band version, which is very different. It has different melodic elements around it. So also in my research for this, I discovered that the full band version has a music video.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was really quite blown away by this music video.
Very talented director.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. I'd love to play that music video along with I know people who are listening to this later might not see it, but the song is there as well, and you'll hear that as well. So don't feel like you're missing out if you're at home just listening. But yeah, tell us about that music video and how that came about, and maybe don't tell us the premise because we'll watch it. But like, how did that happen?
I'm just trying to think. Was that? Oh yeah, it was the same. It was this amazing director who we used to do the first single from the same album, Awayland. Okay. And it was the single called The Waves, and I loved what he did. He was obviously a Kubrick fan, because everything he did was just harking back to Kubrick, and I'm obsessed with Kubrick as well. So I asked him to do this video as well, and we shot it in London. And it was just meant to sort of represent he wanted it to sort of emphasize the kind of mundanity of everyday life. And we decided on this character. There's a line in the song, some kind of moment, what are we hoping to get out of this? Some kind of momentary bliss. So we called the main character Terry Bliss in the song. So he's kind of walking around with a suitcase, and he's obviously quite unhappy with his life. I don't know.
Was it shot in Dublin or?
No, London. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. London.
But, it was a trip. I mean, music videos are always tough because you have a certain dream of the song, and it's in someone else's hands. But I think,
sure.
This guy did a great job.
As far as music videos go, I personally thought this one's really good.
Cool. Yeah.
So, no pressure to enjoy it or anything, but let's check it out. But so this version of the song, though, came before the version of acoustic guitar and singing. Is that right?
In terms of the people hearing the song, is that what you mean?
In terms of your creative process. Or was it actually a simple guitar song before all the layers got added?
I think this version was like the final version that it figured out before it was recorded, for the album.
Yeah.
But yeah, I figured out the
acoustic version. It
certainly
was released long before the acoustic version.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, okay. I'm going to just move a little bit over here so I don't have to kink my neck to watch this, because I want to see it myself. But here we go. I wonder if it's possible to dim those top lights just so we can properly see this. Jono, is that a possibility? I hate to get Jono to move. Give it up for Jono, everybody. He's on the cameras. Okay, let's get cinematic here.
And the seabird sings. our darkest blackout. It's our final end. My dear sweet nothing, let's start anew. From here on in, it's just me and you. I waited for something. It's over, I guess it's begun. It's a loser's table, but we've already won. It's a funny battle, it's a constant game. I guess I was busy.
Bit depression mode.
It's stimulating as well though, and I know this to be true from others aside from myself, because I had a look at the comments below that video, and it prompted a lot of discussion amongst the YouTubers. I thought I might share a few highlights with you.
Please.
I don't think I've ever been so affected by a music video. It's terrible how sad people's life can be, and yet they still prefer their routine when they could step out of their comfort zone and improve their life for themselves. I think the realization that he no longer had to live the life he was living terrified him. Suddenly, he had the power to do whatever he wanted and live a happy life, but that would mean he was responsible for his own happiness now. He could no longer take pity on himself and consider himself a victim of circumstance, since he now had the power to change his circumstances if he wanted to. In the end, he decided he'd rather be unhappy and powerless than to take on that responsibility for his own happiness.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, but like when I saw that moment, something came over me as well that was like, and for those of you who haven't seen the video, I'm sure you've experienced something similar where you're just dying for him to have some kind of, and okay, for those who will be at home listening to this, spoiler alert, we're talking about something that's only visual. Yeah, it's not worth trying to explain exactly what happens, but go and watch the video if you get a chance. But you're just dying for him to be happy. Mm.
Yeah. It's interesting. The YouTube people there, that's much more articulate than normal YouTube comments.
Yeah,
it's
like no, they're,
all these stoic philosophers have just appeared out of nowhere.
There's some that are less articulate as well. I like this one. The man must be special in some way, as there is a singing man who feels he has the need to stalk him everywhere he goes.
That's my favorite.
Maybe I'll leave it at that. There were more in there, but yeah, let's give it to that guy or whoever that was who wrote that. But yeah, terrific music video and just such a different version of the song yet again. And as I was looking for all the cover versions of people playing the song, there was one in particular that I came across that's got no lyrics. And instead, it's people playing the melody of the song on wine glasses.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, while all those other people got one bar of the song, this one deserves the whole clip because it's really cool. It's just like a minute or so long,
cool.
Couple minutes long. But they honed in on the piano line of that song. Check this out.
Is this you, Peter?
No, it's not me. I wish it was. That'd be cool.
There's a big basket of chanterelle mushrooms just over there. Wow. Hey.
That's pretty cool.
That's cute.
No wine arrived.
No wine arrived, exactly. Only water. Yeah, so like, but that fascinates me. You have a song that is really, in all these different versions, what ties them together is the lyrical content and the substance in the lyrics. But then you have a cover of the song that's just about the melodies and the music.
Mm. Yeah.
Is it still the song?
Well, it's the melody of the song.
It's yeah.
Yeah. It's just when you said you were going to show videos of I thought I would have seen I haven't seen any of these ever before.
No way.
Which is and so it's kind of it's just mad for me that you write something and then, you know, someone spends a little bit of their life going into a forest and filling little glasses of water and like it's totally weird to watch that.
That's two people with glasses with water in it in a forest somewhere.
Yeah.
What a lovely moment. What a lovely thing to do.
But maybe they did like 100 songs that day, you know.
I wonder how many takes it took them to get that. Because it looks so peaceful and lovely, but that could have been take number 150. And they're like, man, you kept hitting the... Yeah. Every time I try to hit that glass, your chopstick gets in my way.
Yeah, they had like a terrible day.
Yeah. No, but my guess would be those people had a great day. That's just my guess.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we have one other special thing, sort of surprise kind of planned for when we want to wrap this up and play a version of the song. But I'm just curious, is there anything else that comes to mind in relation to this song? In all the years you've performed it, is it a song that you still perform in most of your sets, would you say?
Yeah, pretty much all of them. I don't know if I've missed, I think it's pretty much been an... Since it came out, it's been in every single Villager show, and it's been it's been really. I'm not lying actually at all, and even a little bit when I say like it's still really satisfying to sing.
Great.
It feels like there's something, like I'm gonna be really happy to sing it for a long time. You know,
it feels.
But also, there's new elements have appeared in it with different players have kind of. Cross through it and it keeps kind of developing and growing in very subtle ways, which is really, really nice. And there's always a moment in the show when the whole room, it's always that bit you're trying to achieve when you're playing music in a room full of people where it doesn't feel like you're the ego emitting your songs to the people. It feels kind of like we're all just celebrating. It sounds really trite to say, but it is that thing you're trying to achieve. We're all celebrating music, and we're all celebrating the ability to sing songs together and stuff. And that is the song that kind of does it quite often in the shows.
Yeah, as we could see with all those people playing it, they want to embody the song themselves.
And
that's beautiful. But it's also great that you still have a good relationship to the song, because I think of people like Bob Dylan who, people go to his shows now and they want to hear him playing The Times They Are A-Changin' on an acoustic guitar, and he's over it. You know, he doesn't want to, he's notorious for...
He doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's great that you could retain that positive relationship with the song. I hope that continues.
It's kind of a pop song, really, though. I mean, it's just, four chords. It's got a formula, which is quite
Well, that second
obvious,
demo wasn't really a pop song.
Yeah, well.
It turned into a pop song, though.
You know, I'm not a jazzer, so you flirt with all these weird versions and then you return to what you know best. So, yeah, that's the...
Yeah.
That's the...
Well, and then sometimes you deviate from what you know best, which is how we're going to end this show. Connor was very... I proposed an idea to him, and he graciously accepted it. I proposed that he send me a version of him singing this song without any instruments, just his voice, and I would write new music underneath, and then we would sing it here together for the first time, and he has no idea what that new music is underneath his song. So, are you ready to try that?
No!
So I wrote something on the piano, and then as I was working, I was thinking, how the hell are we going to do this? How is he going to sing this without hearing this first? So then I wrote to you, and I was like, are you sure you don't want to hear this first? I can make a recording and send it over to you. And he's like, nope, let's just do it. Let's just do it there, which I really admired a lot.
How do I know when to start? Do I start singing and you just start
playing? The universe will tell you. No, okay, here's how it's going to work. Just to let everybody know, we're gonna play a version of this song. The show is going to be over. But after the show is over, Connor has agreed to perform just a few more songs for us if we all feel like sticking around for a few songs. But for our listeners at home, this will be the end of the show, this performance of the song. So I have a little introduction bit. Let's go over to the instruments and we'll get it there.
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, we'll just get some light here. Nice one. Thanks, Jono. Okay, so is this guy on? So I have a little introduction. So here's our key, by the way.
Yeah.
Let's kind of agree on a tempo, maybe Is that good?
Sure.
So if you know your part, theoretically, what I'm about to do should work underneath your voice, but it's different. It's different, and sometimes it's intentionally dissonant.
Okay.
So, but if you sing your melody, it should work.
Okay. So, and I'll keep the pulse, I'll keep the rhythm?
There is rhythm in the piano.
Okay.
So, I'll do a little intro, and I'll give you the nod. You can start the vocal, and I'll follow you, basically, once from then on. Yeah?
Yeah. So excited.
Savannah scatters and the seabird sings. So why should we?
Oh fuck! One more time.
From the top.
I'm getting too interested in your chords.
This is great.
Split my brain.
Savannah scatters and the seabird sings. So why should we fear what travel brings? What were we hoping to get out of this? Darkest blackout, it's our final end. My dear sweet nothing, let's start anew. From here on in, it's just me and you. Something and something died, so I waited for nothing and nothing arrived. Well, I guess it's over, I guess it's begun. It's a loser's table. We've already won. It's a funny battle. It's a constant game. I guess I was busy when nothing came. I guess I was busy.
Cool.
Give it for Pete, everybody.